Chapter 8, Raising Children with ADHD. Thankfully, Charles, our firstborn son, did not have ADHD. Dr. Amen says when parents of children with ADHD have a child without ADHD, they hold him up with great pride, proving they are good parents. Children with ADHD, especially when undiagnosed and untreated, often and repeatedly make their parents believe they are terrible parents, doing everything wrong in child rearing. We were proud of our Charles, high achieving and capable, and were equally bewildered, stymied, and physically and emotionally drained by our other two sons. Jackson, our youngest, had outstanding athletic ability, but also an attitude and an impulsive mouth. Like our other sons, he played soccer, and if his coach said something Jackson did not like, he would say something back. His coach was a no-nonsense, I-am-the-boss kind of person. He dealt with Jackson by letting us know we were deficient parents for having an insolent child. He made sure we knew that if Jackson were his son, such behavior would have been threatened or beaten out of him long ago. Word went up and down the line of parents about what our son said or did to provoke the coach. And so, even though our son was the star player on the team, going to his games brought us no pleasure, as we tensely anticipated the coach's displeasure. Although a good player when the ball came his way, Bruce usually had his mind on other things when the ball was elsewhere on the field. He would look at the grass or the clouds, but never seemed to look at what was happening in the game. As the ball came up the field, his dad, the coach, and other parents anxiously, and sometimes angrily, shouted at him, "Pay attention! Keep your mind on the game! The ball's coming your way!" Moreover, of course, it was not only in recreation that my children proved a handful. Here are just a couple of my memories as an undiagnosed ADHD mother raising two sons with undiagnosed ADHD. Problem 1, no space of my own. When I worked at Toby Jones Retirement Home, I listened to a presentation about the losses people experience when they move into a retirement home. The presenter asked each of us whether we had a space in our homes that was our special place, an area recognized as ours. A space no one violated or entered without permission. Staff members responded, naming a particular chair, the end of the living room sofa, or a corner of a room that was their special place. I realized I had no special place. My sons with ADHD did not respect boundaries. I told them to stay out of my purse, out of my closet, out of my room, to not use my possessions without asking. All to no avail. I knocked before entering their rooms, but they did not extend this courtesy to me. My husband and I became resigned, albeit begrudgingly, to this state of affairs, although we periodically tried to work on it. For Charles, however, his brother's misbehavior was very upsetting. Their violation of his space and possessions caused continual family upset. He got angry with us. "Why don't you do something about it?" he would demand. As I write this, I wonder, why didn't we do something? Why didn't we get him a key to his room? Our house is old, and the original door key was lost, so it would have required taking the door latch to a locksmith, which was more complicated than I could manage. Being naive and idealistic, I didn't want to think one family member had to lock his room against two other family members. Foolishly, I believed more time and effort on my part would solve the problem that the younger boys would learn to respect the rights of others. How my thinking changed. Bruce and Jackson said they would not care if someone took their stuff without asking, so they never believed that others might feel differently. They continually assumed the owner would not mind, even as I repeatedly told them, "I thought" and "I assumed" were unacceptable responses. They needed to ask. Of course, if the item they borrowed was lost or broken, that was that, unless someone, i.e. me, put in the time and energy to require the offending party to replace it and to make sure they did. As with the door latch, I could not provide consistency and follow through. Problem 2. Embarrassed and shamed in public. I still remember our first restaurant meal when we made a reasonable semblance of a nice family out to dinner. Bruce and Jackson were 11 and 9 at the time, and while waiting for our meal, the waiter brought salsa and chips to our table. Both boys stayed seated, miracle upon miracle, and we talked, ate chips, and enjoyed one another's company. Usually, Bruce and Jackson would fight with each other, both verbally and physically, while we waited for our food. And woe to the restaurant that took too long. We would remember and mark it as a place we would not return. The restaurant owners would probably be relieved to learn we had given them a black mark and would not be returning. Usually, after ordering the food and awaiting its arrival, we would send Bruce and Jackson out to do whatever they did. Then Steve, Charles, and I sat and talked quietly while waiting for our food. When it arrived, one of us would look for the other boys and invite them back to the table. Invariably, they told tales of how they found a quarter by crawling under the cigarette machine, or how one of them had hit the other and that when hitting him back, they had accidentally hit another patron. They reported being bawled out, or they had left the water running in the bathroom sink and it was now spilling onto the floor. I know readers may have feelings about this, passing judgment on my husband and me as parents. Looking back on it now, I might pass a similar judgment, but at the time, we were worn out just from trying. Attempting discipline. Although I was spanked when I disobeyed as a child, my discipline method with my sons was to educate them about the right thing to do whenever they did something I disapproved of. If it involved a punishment, I tried to fit the consequences to the misbehavior. Reminding them of the desired behavior in advance sometimes led to the desired behavior, but it was an unending and exhausting process. Education, consequences, and reminders dominated my interactions with Bruce and Jackson. Bruce, where were you this afternoon? I checked to see if you had finished mowing the lawn, and you were nowhere to be found. Now that you're here, go out and finish the job. Jackson, we're going into the store now, and I expect you to stay with me, not to pull things off the shelves and not wander away. Got it? Good. Jackson, you're not allowed into Charles's room without his permission. You need to put that Lego figure back. Bruce and Jackson, why are your coats on the kitchen counter? Pick them up and hang them in the closet. Wouldn't it be better to hang them up as soon as you came in the house? I said this day after day, and then started tossing whatever they left on the kitchen counter down the basement stairs. Bruce and Jackson, stop fighting right now! I can't drive safely! I'm going to pull over until you stop! I stopped the car and waited. When they quieted, I started up again. I said nothing I was not ready to follow through on. I learned from behavior therapy that if you are inconsistent in your responses, if you sometimes ignore their fighting in the car and other times do not, it encourages the behavior. Stopping the car became an effective way to get the boys to cooperate. However, it haunts me to remember one occasion when I stopped the car and said, "I parked in the handicapped parking space because I'm handicapped having you as my children." I hope they don't remember I said that. It was an impulsive ADHD thing to say. A psychologist we saw for family therapy taught me behavior modification that used a point system, doling out rewards and punishments. Our sons earned positive or negative points daily. A certain number of negative points took away privileges, while accumulating positive points earned things like watching a video, getting a pizza, or going to the movies. If they wanted, they could save their points until they earned a bigger reward. I reviewed each child's behavior with him daily and recorded the points earned that day on the calendar. I tallied the weekly totals on Sundays. The system was helpful, and the boys' behavior improved. 1 month later, I was again in the therapist's office. He asked me how the point system was working. I didn't understand what he was asking me. I had forgotten the behavior program I had been using and had no explanation why. I returned home, determined to try again. My renewed effort faltered in 2 weeks. My untreated, inattentive ADHD made it impossible for me to stick with the discipline system that required organization and consistency. I tried another discipline method, 1-2-3 magic, developed by Thomas Phelan, Ph.D. I did not focus on all my son's unacceptable behaviors, just the most trying ones. Each day, when their behavior was unacceptable for the first time, I said, that's a one. With the second occurrence, I said, that's a two. When I started this system, they exhausted me by testing my limits. I tried to be consistent. If I counted to three, they knew the consequences in advance, and I imposed them immediately. After my sons learned I was serious, I rarely counted to three. However, as simple as 1-2-3 magic was, it was not simple enough for me. Restrictions were difficult to enforce, especially when they argued. I was worn out trying to impose, monitor, and remember what the restrictions were. I resorted to using 1-2-3 magic in a single situation, when the children insulted one another, especially at mealtime. The first offense led to a 25-cent deduction in allowance. A second offense, and I took away another 25 cents. It worked, and I stuck with it. It was effective and easier for me to enforce. Neither child wanted me to count higher than two, and our evening meals became enjoyable. When you have children with ADHD, even small achievements are significant. I could go on about our family travails, but I think you get the picture. Those of you living in families with ADHD know that you are not alone. Thankfully, in the midst of this turmoil, Bruce and Jackson were diagnosed and treated for ADHD, and a few years later, so was I. That made a world of difference. As Bruce says, people with ADHD, untreated, know what to do, they just can't get themselves to do it. And as Dr. Orrin Mason says, if there is ADHD in any family members, they all need treatment or too much stress remains. We are a treated family now. We have learned to do what we know we should. Being a parent with ADHD. After finally accepting the diagnosis for Bruce and Jackson, why did it take so long to recognize the disorder in me? When I was diagnosed, the descriptions of the symptoms lacked clarity and specificity and only described children. When I read the symptoms, I said, yes, that describes me for a few, and that doesn't sound like me for others. There were 9 symptoms of inattentive ADHD when I wondered if I had it. I only needed 6 of the symptoms, but they also had to cause significant turmoil in my life. In 1992, the symptoms I knew about were 1. Missing details and becoming distracted easily. I had this symptom whenever I was engaged in one task, like making supper, and thought of something else I needed to do, I went to do it and forgot whatever task I was doing previously. 2. Trouble focusing on the task at hand. I was not sure whether this symptom applied to me. If I needed to do something that I didn't want to do or did not interest me, I lost focus. But I could focus well and for long periods when the subject or activity was interesting. 3. Becoming bored quickly. I didn't know if I met the criteria. I got bored, but did not believe it happened quickly. I avoided boring situations, so as an adult, boredom was rarely a problem. 4. Difficulty learning or organizing new information. I could learn things and loved to learn new and interesting things. I understood new information, but my retention of new learning was poor. Yet I was a logical thinker and could explain things to others clearly. So I was unsure if this symptom applied to me. 5. Trouble completing homework or losing items needed to stay on task. If we replace completing homework with completing housework, I agree. I had trouble. It was difficult for me to start and stay on task. Some of my brain thought someone else did the chores or I had already done them. It repeatedly surprised me to realize that I was required to do the housework and that it would not be done if I did not do it. I acknowledged that I frequently lost items for projects I needed to complete. 6. Becoming confused easily or daydreaming frequently. I was not aware of becoming confused or daydreaming. Maybe the semantics confused me. I thought daydreaming was to engage in wishful thinking, not just thinking about things in my life. I researched ADHD and daydreaming and learned people with ADHD may hyperfocus while daydreaming. This is a more intense state than what people without ADHD experience when they are daydreaming. When people with ADHD daydream, you can call their name and they may not hear you. You may need to stand right in front of the person to get their attention. Had I known daydreaming presented this way, I would have checked this symptom. I remember being so engrossed in reading a book that I didn't hear my children calling my name until they waved their hands in front of the page I was reading. 7. Seeming not to listen when spoken to directly. I did this sometimes, but not always, so I questioned whether I qualified for this symptom. 8. Difficulty following instructions. This symptom was unclear to me. Did it mean I was unwilling to follow instructions or incapable of following them? I know I got better compliance from my sons if I broke tasks down sequentially, leading them through the process step by step. Perhaps it was the same with me. My brain got overwhelmed if anyone told me too many things to remember. 9. Processing information more slowly and with more mistakes than peers. I was unaware of processing information more slowly than others, as I had no way of knowing how fast or slow others processed information. I knew how I did it, but did not know I made mistakes others were unlikely to make. I typed the wrong dates with no awareness of doing so, and left out key words when writing. Again, with no awareness. I repeatedly called someone by the wrong name after it got stored in my brain incorrectly. Based on these criteria, I had only 3 symptoms. Not enough to qualify for a diagnosis. Our knowledge and understanding of ADHD continue to evolve. See links in the resource section to the DSM-5 description of this disorder and the World Health Organization's Adult ADHD Screening Test. Myth: ADHD is caused by bad parenting. Fact: ADHD is rooted in brain chemistry, not discipline. How do critics explain that the same parents challenged to raise their child with ADHD are often model parents for their children without ADHD?